Thank you for tuning in to this message from Kingdom Heirs International, headquarters located in Flagstaff, Arizona.
I know we have all been engaging this whole week in that internal process. We're here ready to deal with our structure, make sure that what we are building is reflective of Him, right, not ourselves. Mm-hmm. Of course, everything that they've just been releasing. And so as we get ready to engage in this Torah portion, which book are we in right now?
Leviticus.
And what is the overarching, like, what's Leviticus? What are we doing? Closer, to draw near, right? But that is the purpose of Leviticus, is the book to be able to draw near. Because we have the structure, right, that was built in Exodus. Now we're in Leviticus, and He is filling that structure, which makes sense that anything that is in my structure is going to be loud mm-hmm. right now. Yeah. So the things I want us to be for tonight, some things I want you to be really aware of as Megan's releasing and as she's teaching, because we know that the loving instructions of the Father are written on your heart,
yeah.
right? They're written on us. They're in your DNA.
Yeah.
But they've been pretty dumbed down or quiet, or they're foggy. Mm-hmm. And he is stirring it up. So literally tonight, if you feel foggy or feel like you're trying to, you know how like you're trying to either stay awake or you're having a dream and you're like trying to put pieces together, or you're like trying to get it to come up, or get it to, like, when you're trying to think of something, that might be some of the sensation you have, because the things that are written on your heart, Yahweh is trying to be able to, oh my gosh, Megan had the word, and rekindle it, right? He's rekindling the very words that are written on your heart, because they're in there. You were created to fill the house.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right? We were delivered for something. You weren't delivered, which is so cool that we're going to celebrate Pesach next week, that like we weren't delivered to just celebrate not being in bondage, right? We were delivered to fill the house. So filling the house, the structures in our mind might be subtle. When Jay was releasing about like, if I have a mindset, if I have a filter, if I have like judgments of like, I don't know about that. Or those feelings that come up in our heart, that is an old mindset, and He is bringing up the truth in us so that we can fill His house.
Right.
Right? So tonight, as you're engaging the word, as Megan's releasing, which is super powerful, because if anyone knows how to draw near,
it is Megan.
Right? What a like gem and a treasure we have tonight for her to be able to be releasing on like sin. If I want anyone releasing on sin, it's Megan. Oh my God. That's so exciting. So if you like are getting foggy, or if you're getting like, I feel like I'm in a bubble. I'm like in my own world. I'm not putting the pieces together. Seriously, get up and do jumping jacks. Like, there's coffee in the back. Like, whatever we need to do. Seriously, there's no judgment. There's no, like, it doesn't matter. That the goal is to be able to fully ingest and partake in the word that's coming. So whatever you need to do to be able to be mentally and physically present as He's rekindling and as He's lifting the fog, you're free to do that. Okay? And we're excited to hear from Megan tonight.
Well, I love listening to Ellen just talk. She always gets me like excited about anything. She can be like, and we're gonna go outside and scrub the dumpster. And I'm like, okay. That sounds fun. Just partnering with her enthusiasm. So, thank you guys. Thank you, Jay. Thank you, Gabe. Thank you, Ellen. It really is amazing to have just a family that comes together, that plays so many different roles in setting a tone, in setting an environment, in making a way, in Everyone coming, having been prepared or made ready in your spirit and in your mind and in your heart to receive a word. I mean, we all just have such an important role to play in what he is establishing. And so Fridays are so exciting because it's when all of that work throughout the whole week, starting on Saturday, you know, we're starting Friday night, moving into your family time, your personal time on Saturday and on till you get back here together on Friday. It's like where the overflow of all of that effort and all of your daily, what can feel like a grind, but it's really you allowing him to press things out and move things and adopt or make what is his your own. And then we come together and we get to bring all of that in one place while he then speaks or adds to everything he's prepared for you to receive. So that is why Friday is my favorite, not because it's the only time and the only place that we should be hearing from him, but because it's literally where we all get to bring what it is that we carry in our personal, intimate relationship with him together in one place. And then he says, and here's more. And then we carry that into the next week. So it really is just so exciting. And I love the excitement over Yahweh speaking to us about sin. that was really, really powerful and a great positioning. And I want to add a couple of things to our positioning tonight before we really get into the actual portion. So the way that we're going to move through tonight, there's kind of two parts. So because we know that Yahweh is in the details, we are going to get into details by going through essentially verse by verse and hearing what he has to say about each of these things that were significant enough to be written down. Right? So because they were written, that means that there is something for us to hear and receive and move from. So I don't want to dismiss any of the detail. At the same time, just like Ellen was saying, this is a season of our lives because we are coming out of a structure of religion and Christianity into what Yahweh is establishing, his structure, the original intent, that the spirit of what we're receiving in his instructions also has to be activated, right? So we want to dive into detail because we have to understand what he means, but then also by the spirit, we have to be empowered and equipped and it has to come alive in us.
Right.
So we're going to do both. Detail and get into what is the spirit releasing and activating in us through this particular portion. Okay? All right. So before we get into the teaching, I want us to kind of stir up a little bit of a heart's, a heart's understanding of Leviticus, which we've already been getting, right? Like the redefining of Leviticus in general, where it used to be seen, or in our old way of thinking, it was seen as a book of regulation and a book of law that felt like, what is all of this that used to have to be done in order to get to you? No wonder it's been done away with. Right? No wonder, because what kind of God would demand all of this of people that he loves?
Yeah.
Right? So there's this misunderstanding. There was this filter that we had about who he is, about his character, that then also would kind of dictate how we receive instructions in general. Right? Yeah. So the book of Leviticus, known now as the Book of Closeness. I want to speak to why. Okay? Why is it a book of closeness? Or just add some things to that. Okay. So, sorry. I have a very, very small computer. My phone is the only thing I have. I can barely use that. Okay. All right. So, We just left Exodus, right? 5 chapters ago, we left Exodus. And in Exodus, just like how we have mirrored this story in our personal journey, the Israelites were delivered, right, from generations of slavery under a completely different culture. So they did not have the means or the access or the permission to be able to celebrate or honor his culture,
right.
His laws, his regulations, his feasts, to worship him, right? They were slaves under a different culture. Okay, so after this period of time, a long period of time where they were enslaved, they were rescued. They were delivered,
yes.
Right? And our framework of understanding was that after deliverance, you are just free, right?
Yep.
But that's because we skipped Leviticus,
yeah.
Right? Meaning our definition of freedom was seen a certain way because Leviticus was irrelevant. But what Leviticus is a bridge. It's a bridge just like Yeshua is a bridge. Okay? Because if you were enslaved and under a different culture, after generation, there are going to have to be a reinstating of the lifestyle, of the mindset, of the culture, of the expectations, of the guidelines that you are meant to live by.
Yeah, right.
Right? Because you have had so much separation from what those were because you were not allowed to engage them or honor them. Right? Okay. So because they could not keep his laws, they were rescued by him in a certain condition.
Yeah.
Does that sound familiar?
Yes.
Okay?
Yeah.
So because they were unable to, then they were in a specific condition upon their deliverance. All right? Now, this condition, just like our condition, is what needs his restoration. So Leviticus brings to his people the means by which that restoration can come.
Okay.
So we have a relationship between Yahweh and humanity or his people, and he needs to bridge the gap that was created through slavery. He needs to bridge that gap of even relationship.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Okay, because they've been living outside of true relationship with him. Okay, so there's restoration that needs to take place. So while we've seen it as a book of unnecessary regulations or unnecessary laws or rituals, it's really about Yahweh's desire to repair his relationship with his people.
Yeah.
Okay? And not just to repair his relationship, but to repair the relationship so that they can then be restored to a holy dwelling place and rest with him as his people, who ultimately are then going to be called to represent his character to nations.
Come on.
Right? So even if you look at one piece of that, you're like, that's amazing. And then he adds even more because he's like, well, I don't want to just restore my relationship. I'm going to go back even further. I don't even want to just free you. I want to then restore our relationship, my personal relationship with you, then restore the relationship that I have intended for you as my people. Then I want our relationship to be restored to a place, a point where we can dwell together. Not just for the sake of being on good terms,
yeah, right. Yes, right.
Or so that you can whatever in our human nature, we would say, well, I just want things to not feel weird, or not that God thinks that way, but we will tend to put the way that we operate on him,
yep,
And so then we minimize who and how he is.
Yeah.
So that's just like the beginning. But he's wanting restored relationship so that the holy dwelling place is something that we can reside in with him, right? Then, so that we can represent the nations. I'm obviously interchanging Israel and we, because we are his grafted in people. So this is personal as well, right? Okay. So this book then is also about mercy and it's about forgiveness. Right? Going all the way back to Genesis, where humanity chose to rebel against his guidelines and could no longer reside with him. Right?
Right.
Yahweh is providing an opportunity to gain back what was lost, and he's instructing them on how to atone for their defilement and for their corrupted nature.
Yeah.
Right? Okay. And there's more, because these guidelines not only provide a way to atone for the conditions that we allowed, remember how we had to walk out a process of saying, can we just own, can we just own on behalf of the bride and our personal lives that we were in opposition to him?
Yes.
Right? Okay. So, okay. I'm excited. I'm trying not to jump ahead. All right. So going all the way back, Yahweh is providing opportunity to redeem what's been lost. Again, we see it over and over and over again in Scripture. Another opportunity for restoration. Another opportunity for right relationship. Another opportunity so that we can once again dwell and rest with him. Again and again. Okay, so kind of along the lines of what was released before we even started service tonight, which is so exciting when there's so much breath on something and the Spirit just prepares us in all of these different ways. But when Gabe and everyone was talking, I don't even remember who said what because it all just was flowing. But when we're talking about generational reliability, which I know is Gabe, how do we ensure what's being established is consistent, right? And passed on generation after generation. Once we own what truth is, how do we ensure that that's passed on? So not only these guidelines, I'm pointing back to them, because not only do these guidelines provide a way for our condition to be atoned for, but it also provides the structure for how to maintain a condition that ensures that we get to continuously dwell with him.
Right?
Yeah. That's good. Right? So what's incredible is the beginning is a means of atoning, and then it continues so that we also have the means by which to maintain that relationship. So not just that it would be restored, but that it would be continuously maintained. That's what the instructions are for. Okay. So when we call this the book of closeness, what we're saying is not only does he want to make sure that sin isn't keeping us separated in a moment or in a season of life, but he wants to retrain the way that you think, the way that you live your life, right? The way that you function so that you can stay in right relationship with him, even in our weakness, even in our failure, but that we would have the strategy or the structure to be able to stay close. Right? Okay. All right. One thing I want to remind us of before we get into the portion is this was released a couple of weeks ago. We don't get to choose how and in what ways we remain close. Do you remember that?
Yes.
Right? Okay. If I'm not the creator that created you for a purpose, which was to dwell with me, then I don't get to establish the framework or the guidelines of what it looks like to be close.
Yep.
Yes?
Yes.
Yes. Okay, right? So the creator creates me, and he says, these are the instructions that I'm giving you to safeguard your heart and your mind and your life so that you can just dwell with me and the intentions that I have for you can be fulfilled. You, as the created one, right, the one that he created, can't say, I don't know, I think I have a better idea. And he's like, no, I literally made you. Like, wait, I made, and it's like, well, yeah, but you made me, and I have my own mind, and I have my own will, and I have my own, right? Don't act like we don't say that. You know, like really, even in a moment where it's like, oh no, I have my own mind, and I know my mind. Right? Like, I know my mind, you don't. He's like, I created you. What do you mean? So, anyway. Okay, I just want to remind us of that. Part of the struggle or the wrestle in that mindset that we step into is, and the reason why I'm prefacing with this is so that we can receive the detail without any opposition and without any filter in us that would say, no, I know. Right?
Yeah.
I know my own, whatever. Okay. So part of the reason why we'll kind of go back to that place is because we've made him so familiar that laws sound off-putting. Yeah. We've talked about familiarity before, and it is not that we do not have a God who wants to be intimate. Those are not the same. Okay? It's not the same. We can be familiar in the sense of be close and intimate, but when you become familiar with something in a way that then positions you equally, it is not okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So what will happen is he's so familiar that laws are off-putting, okay? And that's coming from a mindset of he should come to where I am. That's literally what that means. He should come to where I am. Now he meets us where we are, but it's only to call us to his standard.
Right.
It's only to call us to his position, his place of authority over our lives.
Yeah.
It's not because he's saying, this is acceptable, I'll dwell with you here.
Yeah.
Okay?
Right.
So what happens is when he says, I can't reside with you there. I need you to get some things in order. I need you to come under the structure that I have given you. I need you to submit to my authority and submit to some things that are out of order in your life or in your mind or in the way that you operate. That is because he's holy. And we're not. And that can offend us. Okay, and that's because of familiarity. He becomes so familiar that we take offense to him being holy. When he calls you to a standard, or when he has the audacity to have one in general, it's because he's holy.
Yeah.
He's not human.
Yes.
He's not you. He's not me. And because he is a God who in his holiness wants a relationship with you, he will establish some guidelines in your life. That's the difference. And that is his grace. That is his goodness. That is his mercy. That is his love. Okay. So, in order to receive the guidelines, we have to acknowledge who we are talking about, right? And who we are in comparison. Okay. And outside of those guidelines, we have none at all. I mean, truly, truly, the morality, the tendencies that we have that are good are because you are his creation, right? That you were meant to reflect who he is. Everything else, though, is us, meaning everything else is humanity. It's human nature.
Yeah.
And this was said last week. It would all be subjective and dependent on each individual's state or condition.
Yeah.
If we didn't have his, that's terrifying. I know what's in me.
Yeah.
I know what I'm capable of outside of him. I get glimpses or moments of it in my frailty or in my moments of weakness, and I think, how scary to be any further than this.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And that's not even just in my own, the way that I would think or conduct myself, but I mean what I could possibly put my hands to when it comes to his people.
Yeah.
Right? Because we're talking about justice, we're talking about righteousness. Justice and righteousness outside of holiness in someone's hands that doesn't know, that's frightening. Okay. All right. So a couple quick little positionings, and then we're going to start. First, this is when I was studying, this is one of the things that I heard Yahweh speak over myself before I entered my time. And so I just wanted to release it over everyone. He said, don't dismiss conviction for irritation. Okay. So while you are hearing the guidelines, not just tonight, but in general, this is new. We haven't studied his instructions before. We have been free in all kinds of ways, right? So when we start to study the guidelines and you respond, or there's a response that comes from you, a lot of times a feeling of irritation can really be his conviction that we don't want to own. Okay? So don't shut down. Don't step out.
Yeah.
Just acknowledge it. All right. And then second, which is also what we're going to end with tonight, is remember the character of Yahweh that we're building on.
Yeah.
Meaning the reintroduction to his character that we all have been able to experience since stepping out of that narrative of religion and of Western Christianity. Coming out of that, we were introduced to a completely different Yahweh,
right?
A completely different Messiah, a completely different spirit, and hear or receive the instructions from the foundation of the character that we're now building on. Okay? All right. Because his character is all over in every single verse, in every single direction that he gives when it comes to sacrifice and atonement and what he does consider a transgression or a sin. It is dripping with the reality of his character, and it is so good. And now we can say, we can look at a book like Leviticus and still say he's good. Right? Thank God for the work that's been done up until it was time to move into his instructions.
Yeah.
Right? He has done some work in our filters and in our mindsets when it comes to accusation, when it comes to how we hear him, what we think of him, and we need it in order for the structure to be established. Okay, so be holding on to that. All right. Okay, so Leviticus 5, when we start in the portion, which I'm going to go ahead and, I feel like I'm getting really old. I'm like, the lighting. And I have contacts on. Okay, I'm just going to read the first specific transgression that Yahweh speaks to, okay? All right. If a soul sins after hearing a charge of an oath, and he is a witness, whether he has seen or otherwise known, if he fails to report it, then he will bear his guilt. Okay, so we're talking about failing to be a witness, okay, or to be a truthful witness. All right, so here's where detail comes in, but also the spirit. Oh, thank you. All right, so first of all, why does this matter? When it comes to this being something that's significant enough for not only it to be a guideline, but for there to be a means of atonement if we fail to be a truthful witness. Why does that matter?
Yeah.
Okay. So obviously this is just a starting point. We are going to dive into layer after layer after layer. We will be studying the word, the Torah, for the rest of our lives. So this is not fully encompassing. This is just for tonight. Okay? It's really hard to dive into these things and be like, where do we even start? Okay. So obviously, we are his. We're responsible to him. We're partners in what? Governance, right? We're partners in seeing his justice done. That's what this is saying. Okay? He is truth, and he calls us to represent truth. Representing truth is ownership. Right? We've learned that a kingdom mindset is not a mindset that says, that's not mine. Right? This is like the perfect example of saying, that's not mine. Right? And we're a part of a community, meaning his people are a nation, a community. They're responsible for one another and to one another and ultimately to him. Okay? Which means that we're responsible as we're being re-entrusted with the law and learning it for the first time. We're also learning that we're responsible for maintaining its integrity.
Yeah.
Because that is what this instruction is pointing to. Okay? So just as we do now in court with witnesses, with a jury, just like Dad had been speaking to about like those comparisons between the law and the law.
Right.
You know?
Right.
It's the same. That we are responsible for maintaining the integrity of his law. Okay? All right. There's also something to be gained from this instruction when it comes to our understanding of a lie versus omitting truth. Okay? So, denying, like, I don't know how everybody categorizes it, but as humans, we have a tendency to allow things like this to be subjective,
yeah.
Right? So it's like, well, this is a lie,
right,
but this isn't a lie.
Right.
Like, I mean, I've done that. For sure. You know, where I'm like, well, that's not a lie. That's just like an omission.
Right.
but my heart, right? like my heart's position. So this is also a means of accountability. Okay. We are also responsible and accountable to one another. We have a responsibility both to the offender, meaning speaking of a community, right? Which is the context for this law. We are a community. We are responsible for one another and accountable to one another. So, not just a responsibility to the offender, but also to the ones that the offense affected.
Yeah. Yes.
Right? So what's amazing about Yahweh's grace is even his means of accountability to one who has been an offender.
Yes.
That accountability is still fathering.
Yep.
Right? Holding someone accountable to a standard is absolutely an act of love out of a covenant oath. But also, there has to be an acknowledgement that a community is affected when someone within it does not maintain the integrity or the standard of his law.
Yeah.
If you are a community, that means that your actions and your personal integrity directly affects those that you are in community with. So there is a standard, and it is high.
Yep.
Because it is not just about you.
Right.
That is not how he functions. It's not how he created us to function.
Yep.
We're meant to be accountable to one another. We're meant to be sharpened by one another. Okay. All right. I'm going to continue to the second verse. Or if a person touches any unclean thing, whether it is the carcass of an unclean animal, or the carcass of unclean livestock, or the carcass of unclean creeping things, though it is hidden from him, still he is unclean, and he will be guilty. I'm going to actually read the next verse too. Or if he touches some human uncleanness, whatever his filth is by which he is unclean, though it is hidden from him, when he knows of it, then he will be guilty. Okay. There's a handful of things in this one. There's detail and there's context, like within the scope of history, but then we also have the spirit. Okay. So, the concept of being unclean was concerning the preserving. I mean, we're talking about the structure after the tabernacle's been built, right?
Right.
Okay. So we're talking about preserving the holiness of the temple. We're learning how to dwell in his presence.
Yeah.
Right? That's part of what Yahweh is establishing here, is guidelines. So going back to even what we talked about at the beginning of tonight, that he is allowing things to be restored so that we once again can have a sacred place of dwelling with him.
Yeah.
But it has to stay that way.
Yeah.
It has to stay sacred. It has to stay holy. And there are things that oppose him by their very nature because they are extensions, not of him, but of broken humanity.
Yeah.
They're extensions of our rebellion that cannot reside where he does.
Yeah.
Right.
Right? So by extension, then, when we talk about clean or unclean, we're talking about preserving holiness. By extension, the people then have to have guidelines to be clean.
Yeah.
Because they're coming in and out of that sacred place.
Yeah.
Okay? Which we can have a whole other added context to, because now we are the temple.
Right.
So talk about another level of standard,
yeah.
Which we'll get into a little bit of that too tonight. Okay. So animals considered either clean or unclean. That even goes back during Genesis and the time of Noah. And now we're adding death, right? We're talking about the remains of animals. So when we talk about death in general, that's pointing us back to that original rebellious state or that positioning that then we no longer could reside with him in a sacred place, right? Because that's when death came.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. So we're learning that there's things that could be received by him and there's things that could not, right? That's another aspect. There's things that were unfit to be used for worship. And just like those things, we're learning how we can make ourselves holy to dwell. So there's more connection that will come the further we get into Leviticus, the more that we get. I mean, there are so many instructions in Leviticus, and there's things that point us back to even this verse when it comes to unclean and clean that will bring more description the further on we get into the book itself. But for the sake of just an introduction, this is not the first time that we hear clean or unclean, and it's not a new thing, okay? But remember, if they're coming out of Exodus, hi Judah, if they're coming out of Exodus, then that means that there's having to be guidelines reestablished, okay? So we're hearing things that to us, because we don't have all of the, we're not carrying yet, We're not so confident in the law that we can like make those connections. At least I can't yet, where I can make those connections like, oh,
right.
we heard this here and that's why it connects with this. Like we're still growing in that. But for the sake of where we are now, note that this is not, it might feel new, but it's not. Okay. When it comes to that concept of clean and unclean. Okay. All right. Okay, I want to speak to the concept of unclean a little bit because I feel like it can be a little, I don't know, like I was saying before, off-putting, maybe. Like in our newness to really give Yahweh permission to instruct us, when we hear things like that, it can kind of like rub against our any residue from our old mindset of like, but you know, but I'm not, or but you know what I mean, and then it doesn't allow us to fully receive what he's saying. Okay, so unclean is related to a spiritual condition. Okay, all this is about is being separate from the impurities of the world. Meaning, if we are saying, if we're proclaiming that we are set apart, what sets us apart? Right? We are in a world that is separate from him because of the decisions that we once made that positioned us a certain way, right? And we're having to walk out the repercussions of that. And as we do, we have this God who's trying to extend us by his grace, invitation after invitation to get back into right relationship with him. And while that happens, he says, but there are things of the world that are impure, and you have to separate yourself from them.
That's good.
Right? You have to be separate from them. There are repercussions of sin, and I cannot draw close to them. Okay, which is why we have regulations, which is why we have standards, it's why we have Yeshua. Right? Okay. So when it comes to this concept of even a carcass or death, death is the effect, right? It's the effect of sin. It's this like constant memorial to that repercussion. So it makes a little bit more sense then why something like touching death and then entering his holy place would be something that he couldn't allow, or that he that could defile the temple. Does that make more sense when we look at it from that context versus the blood covers it all? Right? And not to dismiss, but to simply continue to help break down old mindsets so that we can receive it all in full. Because if anything, it just gives more empowerment and more revelation to the power of the blood.
Sure.
Right? When we understand how much separation truly did come in. Right? But when we only see Yeshua, then it's like it allows us to distance ourselves in some way from this state of being unclean.
Yeah.
I can walk around and rub up against all the impurity in the world and put myself in situations where I know that it is in opposition to his character or to his standards for holiness, but it's okay because it's covered. That's the mindset I'm saying has to be fully torn down. Because he says, if you are set apart, that means you have to position yourself set apart from what I say is impure.
Yeah.
Not claim my son's blood over everything that you choose to do or the way that you choose to live.
That's good.
Completely different. Good. If anything, it kind of, I'm trying to think of a not offensive way to say it, but because it's like in my head as like, it's like spitting in the face of when we're saying, no, I'm activating the blood. No, you're dishonoring the blood by saying I can do whatever I want. And he's like, you can't come close to me then. And we're like, well, that's offensive.
No.
Right? Because didn't you do all of this so that I could be right? It's like, you see how confusing it can get? We're working our way out of it. Okay. All right. Now, later, I'm not going to fully get into this now, but later when it comes to death, and the whole concept of being unclean, that When we move into Numbers, it actually speaks to how those who become unclean and fail to purify themselves will be completely cut off from the assembly. That if you position yourself to still rub up against those things and you don't clean yourself and you enter my dwelling place, you will be cut off. Meaning I'm introducing that now so that we can begin to carry the gravity of why the guidelines are so essential. Okay. Defiling the sanctuary of the Lord. All right. It also speaks a little bit. I don't want to get into it too much now because I really want to get after it later. But it also speaks to awareness and unawareness. Okay? So just to clarify, we are guilty as soon as we sin. It doesn't matter if we were unaware or not.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah.
Now, there are distinctions when it comes to intentional and unintentional in the way that he responds or what he asks of you to atone for, but nowhere does it say, well, that's fine.
Yeah.
No.
Right?
Which later we're going to get into the essentially like pleading ignorance. We're going to get into that. All right. Next verse. Verse 4. All right. Or if a person swears rashly with his lips to do evil or to do good about anything that one might utter rashly by an oath, though it is hidden from him when he realizes it, then he will be guilty of one of these. Okay. Oh, man. What did you guys think about the false, like, unkept oath? Did that convict anybody else? Mm-hmm. And make you, like, super aware of your words?
Yeah. It was rash.
Yeah. Anyone? Did you guys freak out? Mm-hmm. Okay, I did. I mean, really, I feel like what's happening is that Yahweh is calling us to a whole other level of integrity.
Right.
Okay? So rash or thoughtless really just means without any consideration of consequence. Okay? It also means without concern for others. Okay? Okay, so if a person swears rashly, even if it's to do something good, the issue is, obviously, it's without consideration of consequence or concern for others, but that directly opposes his character. He is not thoughtless. He is not rash. He's the epitome of intentionality.
Yeah.
And he is the epitome of follow through.
Yeah.
Has there ever been a word or a promise that he has left unfulfilled or unsatisfied? No. He cannot break his own promise.
Right.
He is faithful.
Right.
And he expects the same of us. The same level of integrity. Now, in Matthew, we hear, let me go to that scripture. Oh, now my words got tiny. Okay. I'm going to read it, I think. Matthew 5, 33 through 37. All right, so here's what Yeshua has to say. Again, you have heard that it was said to those of old, you shall not swear falsely, but shall carry out your oaths to Adonai. But I tell you, do not swear at all, not by heaven, for it is the throne of God, or by the earth, for it is the footstool of his feet, or by Jerusalem, for it is the city of the great king. And do not swear by your head, for you cannot make a single hair white or black, but let your word yes be yes, and your no, no. Anything more than this is from the evil one. So again, we have Yeshua come and not eradicate the father standards, but
yeah.
Says, actually... Actually, now that you have me, I'm calling you to an even greater standard, and I'm saying you should have such integrity, and you should walk in his character to such a degree that you don't even have to make a promise.
Yeah, that's good.
That you just say yes and you do it. It's a little side note. All right, so again, Yeshua's pressing the standard and addressing our character. Now, some of the, like the father's heart that I feel is in this portion when it comes to a false oath is so much about shaping our integrity, because he knows that the more rash and thoughtless you are, the more rash and thoughtless you become.
Yeah.
It gets easier and easier to not uphold your promises.
That's good.
The more you make a false promise, as simple and small and seemingly insignificant as it is, the easier it is to continue making a false promise.
Mm-hmm.
It could be, I mean, again, like the word says, it could be good. You could be saying, I'm going to change this about my life,
mm-hmm.
or I'm not going to treat someone like this anymore.
Yeah.
And then you don't.
Right.
Yahweh says that's a sin.
That's good.
Yeah.
That if you utter, this is what I'm saying. Like when I was reading it this week, I was like, oh my gosh, I need to go get a bull or a, like, I don't know what to do about the level of just,
yeah.
of sin and these small
yeah.
things
uh-huh.
that become so frequent in my life that it's plain that it's in opposition to him.
Yeah.
It's in opposition to his character. And think about the work that's been done when it comes to working our way back at honoring a vow, at honoring a promise. This is why we are where we are.
Yeah.
It does not, a shift in the culture to the degree that we are having to come back around from does not happen in this grand big presentation. It is false oath after false oath. This is just another way of explaining it or looking at it. After false oath. It is a once held promise to Yahweh that I do not follow through on. And then another, and then another, and then another, until I'm so far removed from right relationship with him that I literally, I don't know him anymore. This is how he safeguards not just our character, but closeness. A false unkept oath, causing degrees of separation that build and build and build in relationship, that build and build and build, right? A false promise made in relationship. I mean, think about how that affects you personally in your close relationships that you have. When somebody gives you their word and they do not fulfill it, is that, can that be devastating to a relationship? Okay. What if we did it over and over and over and over and over and over again to the one who created us? But he also emphasizes community. So when we do it over and over and over and over again to the ones that we're in community with, it still affects him. And it's a false representation of who he is. Which also affects him. Right? So if you are known to be his, but everything that comes out of your mouth is a promise that's unfulfilled, that's how you are representing him.
Yeah.
Integrity. When we talk about integrity, it's not because, like, we're just trying to be good people.
Yeah, right.
Right? Like, we are because he's good, but he's good because he has standards.
Yeah.
Right? So we can't just have this human effort to be good people, but then dismiss what he says is good. He sets the tone. He says what's integrity and what's not. Okay. What you say in this scripture, you will be held accountable for. According to scripture. Okay? Not only can it become easier to not uphold a promise, but we also can use it as a way to get out of being held accountable. So, basically, a promise made carelessly is still a promise. It doesn't matter if it was, well, I didn't mean that. Right? He's saying, be intentional in what you say. And let your yes be your yes and your no be your no. Part of this too is that Yahweh talks about, and Yeshua talks about how powerful and meaningful our words are. We are meant to co-labor or co-create our words. Our words have power. Scripture says that your word can kill. Your tongue can destroy. That doesn't always have to look like getting in someone's face and being nasty.
Right.
It can look like a promise unkept. We are not meant to be flippant in our nature when it comes to our words. Okay. One other aspect of this. Yahweh is a witness. Meaning, every word or every promise or vow that you make, he is always included in. If he is the standard for truth, and he is your, I don't know how to describe that. He is your, you are an extension of him, then he is a witness to the things that you speak. Meaning you're putting his name on things you say when you bear his name. Right? So someone who doesn't might have a different type of accountability, but to one who bears his name, that means that he is a witness to the things that you do and the things that you say. All right. I'm going to read Ecclesiastes 5, just a couple verses real quick, before we end this part of the portion. Do not be quick with your mouth, nor hasty in your heart to utter a word in God's presence. This is what I mean about a witness. For God is in heaven, and you are on the earth, therefore let your words be few. As a dream comes with excessive burdens, so a fool's voice with too many words. When you swear a vow, don't delay in fulfilling it, for he takes no delight in fools. Pay what you vow. It is better for you not to vow than to vow and not pay. Don't let your mouth lead your flesh to sin, and don't say before the messenger, it was a mistake. Why should God be angry at your voice and destroy the work of your hands? Many dreams and many words are meaningless. Therefore, fear God. Okay, you guys, so those were the three transgressions or sins that are emphasized in chapter 5. Okay, at least as far as up to verse 19, which is what we're going through. All right, so then we move into how to atone, right? That's what's next. Okay. All right, now while we move into how to atone, I want us to be listening for a couple of specific things, because we're receiving the rebuilding of his character, right? So we want to make sure that we're intentional in listening for it. All right, so we're going to listen for the expression of his character in the atonement, right? Part of this is going to distinguish him from all other gods, because the point of his sacrifice is to bring you close. Okay? Also, he wants the sacrifice to be something that you can give so that you can be in right standing with him. He doesn't look, this is the thing about him being holy. He is holy, so he has a position that is completely different from yours, but he does not lord his position over you. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
That difference?
Yeah.
Which distinguishes him from other gods. Okay? But because he's holy, he doesn't lower himself to our defiled condition either. So he doesn't lord over you and make your sacrifice unattainable so that closeness can't be restored, so that he can get distance and just be this God that is unreachable, that is unattainable, that is untouchable, that is, you know, that's what I mean by he doesn't lord himself over you, but he also is Lord. So he doesn't lower himself to our standard, which is the wrestling match that we get in when we don't think that we need to change our behavior or live a lifestyle that he says to live, because it's like, well, I'm free. That's that familiarity, right, of who he is. Okay, so we're gonna listen for those things. And then also, we're going to be paying attention to action versus intention. All right. Okay, verses 5 through 6. when one becomes guilty of one of these things, he shall confess about what he has sinned. Then he is to bring his trespass offering to Adonai for his sin that he committed, a female from the flock, a lamb or a goat as a sin offering. So the Kohen is to make atonement for him over his sin. Okay, so the first thing we notice in verse 5, what is the first thing that they have to do, that we have to do when it comes to atonement? Confess. Okay. All right. What is confession? What does that mean? Like, what does that mean to us? Acknowledgement, saying it out loud, owning. Yeah. Yeah, those are really good. Okay. So, just like we talked about in some of the previous verses, Yahweh's holding us accountable to guilt, right? So he says when one becomes guilty, okay, that's not saying once you realize it, you're guilty. He's guilty, we are guilty the moment we act in opposition to Yahweh. What this is referring to is our awareness and our ownership. Okay, so once we become aware and we're willing to own, then we confess. But again, I want to make sure we have that distinction. That does not mean that until you own that you're not guilty. Because you can walk your whole life and be guilty of being in opposition to him and never own it.
Right.
That doesn't mean you can tell yourself. We can tell ourselves, if I don't acknowledge something, I mean, that's a really easy way to self-preserve.
Yeah.
Right? If I just don't acknowledge this, or if I just don't look at this, then it's not there.
Yeah.
But Yahweh says, the moment you position yourself in sin against me, you are guilty. Mm-hmm. But once we acknowledge, or once we become aware, then we confess. Okay? So confession, it's exposure and ownership, which are things at this point, I feel like we should be pretty, you know, it's still hard, but the process that we've walked through, what were some of the first foundational things we learned as kingdom heirs when Yahweh took us out of religion and introduced us into kingdom?
Yeah.
What was it?
Self-reflection.
Self-reflection and exposure.
Yeah.
Right? It was, look at it. Don't look away. It's hard and it's scary to look at your condition. It's really scary.
Yeah.
But it's there. It's there whether you look at it. It's there whether you acknowledge it. It's there whether you own it or not.
Yeah.
But when you do, then he has an invitation.
Yeah.
Right? And it starts with confession. Okay. So confession is about exposure and ownership. But it's also a repositioning. Okay, so when I confess something, I'm repositioning myself because I am acknowledging that I've been in sin. So as opposed to I'm walking around either unaware or ignorant to my sin because I didn't realize that was an offense to him,
yeah.
Which
yeah.
is a lot of what we've been, you know, a lot of what we've been characterized by is we were unaware. That doesn't mean that we weren't guilty.
Right.
It doesn't mean that we weren't in sin, but we were unaware. Okay? So if I'm walking around unaware, I'm positioned differently than when I am and when I expose what I'm now aware of. It's a repositioning.
Yeah.
Okay? Okay. It's also a way to fully acknowledging his authority. Okay, when I confess something, I'm confessing because I'm recognizing that there is a gap between myself and him.
Yeah.
Right? So if I never acknowledge, if I never confess my sin, that means that I am positioning myself a certain way when it comes to his authority. Does that make sense? It's like saying, I don't need to come under you. So if you don't need to come under him, Who are you saying has ultimate authority? Me. I'm saying my authority is greater. If I don't ever have to acknowledge the difference between the way I operate and the standard that you've called me to, then I'm saying I'm on the seat of authority over my own life.
Right.
You aren't. So confession is also about coming under his authority and his standard in comparison to the one that we just confessed we were embracing. Right? There's a standard that I was carrying, or a way that I was operating, or an action that I perform, right? Or a mindset that I have. It can be thoughts. It doesn't always have to be an action, whatever. It could be a mindset. And so when I confess that, then I'm acknowledging that his standard is greater in comparison to the one that I've been operating in. That's why confession is so important. It might seem like something that's like, well, he just knows my heart. You know, like all, again, familiarity. Where it's like, I don't need to go through a process of making anything known or exposing anything, because if he sees everything, then he just knows, right? But then you're denying yourself the opportunity to be repositioned, and you're denying him the ability to be in authority over your life. Because without that acknowledgement, there can't be a repositioning. Okay. Another important thing about confession is sometimes we will move into sacrifice and not confess. Right? Does anyone feel like they have a connection to that? Like they could see that?
Yeah.
How in our lives we could have a tendency to like make atonement for, or without fully confessing, kind of like you're just going through the motions, or you're trying. Essentially, that's what performance is. Right? Where I want to appear righteous or holy, but I'm not doing the internal work to restore my relationship with him, but I'm going to bring a great sacrifice.
Yeah.
Right?
Right?
That's performance. That comes from a heart that he will say he doesn't know.
That was good.
Okay, so without confession, your offering means nothing. That's the order. I mean, I'm just reading the order. Meaning, like, that's what I'm getting from. He said to confess first. So there's got to be a reason, right? Okay. All right, so we've got confession. Then he's to bring his trespass offering, okay? And he goes into the different offering types all the way through verses 6 through 13. I'll go ahead and just read it, since I am reading things anyway. Okay. Then he is to bring his trespass offering to Adonai for his sin that he committed, a female from the flock, a lamb or a goat as a sin offering. So the Kohen is to make atonement for him over his sin. But if one cannot afford a lamb, then he shall bring as his trespass offering for the sin he committed two turtle doves or two young pigeons to Adonai. One is for a sin offering and the other for a burnt offering. He is to bring them to the Kohen, who will present the one for the sin offering first and twist its head from its neck, but not sever it completely. He is to sprinkle some of the blood of the sin offering on the side of the altar, while the rest of the blood is to be drained out at the base of the altar. It is a sin offering. He is to make the second a burnt offering, according to the regulation. So the Kohen is to make atonement for one over his sin that he committed, and he will be forgiven. But if one cannot afford two turtle doves or two young pigeons, then he is to bring as his offering for the sin he has committed a tenth of an epheth of fine flour as a sin offering. He is to put no oil on it, nor put any frankincense on it, for it is a sin offering. He is to bring it to the Kohen, when the Kohen is to take his handful of it as the memorial portion and burn it up a smoke on the altar, on Adonai's offerings by fire. It is a sin offering. The Kohen is to make atonement for him over his sin that one has committed in any of these things, and he will be forgiven. The rest belongs to the Kohen, just like the meal offering. Okay, So we hear a handful of things in these verses. We hear different animal types, right? And we hear two different types of offerings. Okay, so the animal types are based on ability, because the way that scripture describes it is, where does it say? Is if he can't, right? If one cannot afford. If one cannot afford, it says that each time that he presents another option, right? Okay. So this is a reflection of Yahweh's character, because what we're seeing is that he is emphasizing that there is a difference between intention and action while he still honors the heart. Meaning, there has to be action. That's something that we've missed, right? Which is part of what Yahweh is reestablishing when it comes to integrity, that your intention is not enough. There has to be action. But your heart's position matters, right? So he's not saying it has to be this offering, but there does need to be an offering, right? Okay, now sin offering versus a burnt offering. We went through these a couple weeks ago. One thing that's interesting, meaning that like the definition or the point between like what's a sin offering, what's a guilt offering, what's a grain offering, those kinds of things. But here we see that a sin offering comes first before the burnt offering. Do you guys remember what a burnt offering was for? When that was described, you guys remember? I'll give you a few minutes to look in your notes. I'm trying to find the actual date for you guys. Well, that's okay. Okay, basically, the purpose of a burnt offering is devotion. It's like a recommitment. Okay, so something that I want us to note from the order of the offerings in atonement here for those three transgressions that were described is that the sin offering was first. Okay, now when we think of order, it makes sense. It's just like what we talked about with performance. If I was to recommit or bring an offering to show Yahweh my devotion, but I haven't acknowledged my sin, then the burnt offering doesn't matter, right? That's like another false promise, where it's like, well, I'm not going to deal with my sin, but I'm going to offer an expression of my devotion. No. An expression of your devotion is getting your life in order so that you can live in a lifestyle of devotion unto him, right? Which is outside of sin. So the sin offering is first. So right standing relationship, right? You bring an offering so that you that transfer that happens with the animal, that pressure that was placed. Okay, so that happens, and then the burnt offering. Okay. All right. How are we doing on time? Okay. So now we're going into verses 14 through 16. Adonai spoke to Moses, saying, if anyone commits a faithless act and sins unwittingly against the holy things of Adonai, then he is to bring his trespass offering to Adonai, a ram without blemish from the flock, according to your value in silver shekels, after the shekel of the sanctuary for a trespass offering. He is to make restitution for that which he has done wrong in regard to the holy thing, and is required to add a fifth part to it and give it to the Kohen. So the Kohen will make atonement for him with the ram of the trespass offering, and he will be forgiven. Okay, So the beginning of these verses, it says faithless acts and sins unwittingly. Okay. I want to make a distinction between I just didn't know or I was unaware and faithless and unwitting. Because we have a tendency to be very lenient with ourselves. And I'm not speaking against grace. I'm not speaking against mercy, but I am speaking to a standard and accountability. Okay? So faithless and unwitting does not mean I just didn't know. It means disloyal due to a lack of intentionality. That is very different. Yeah, it means disloyal due to a lack of intentionality.
Megan, is that like Cain and Abel?
That they were not intentional? Is that what you mean?
Abel was Cain, wasn't?
Oh, I don't know. Maybe. Okay. So part of why this is so important for us to understand right now, this distinction between unaware and disloyal due to a lack of intentionality. One, we can hear all over Leviticus from the very first chapter to now that we are being called to be a people of strong integrity. Okay? And that means if you have integrity, you have to be intentional. You cannot be an unintentional person and be characterized by integrity. Being unintentional is flippant, right? And we're becoming a people who he's asking to grow in our faithfulness so that we can be fully entrusted with nations, with his will, with his intentions. So we cannot be faithless and unwitting. Okay. All right. Then it talks about holy things. Okay. So that's speaking to the requirements within the sanctuary, like offerings, first fruits, things that belong to him and his service, that are unto his service. Okay. All right. These actually are going to be addressed more in Leviticus as we go on. It's going to point back to holy things and speak to what those are. But that's where I'm getting that. It's things like offerings and first fruits. It's things that happen within the sanctuary. Okay? Okay. So this offering that we've moved into, when we talk about, where did I go? Oh, I turned the page. Okay, so starting at verse 14, when we're talking about committing a faithless act and sins unwittingly against the holy things, okay, this is demanding a different type of offering. Okay, this is, I mean, first of all, the animal is different, right? It's a ram, and it's a male ram, which we've learned is greater value, right? Culturally, there's a greater value. And there's no alternatives. So we have an expression of his character in all of the alternatives. If one cannot afford, this is your offering. If one cannot afford, this is your offering. Well, now we have another aspect of his character that says, if you, in your disloyalty, due to a lack of intentionality, people who I have deemed worthy of my trust and call to a level of faithfulness, if you commit a sin against the holy things, then this is the offering that's required, and there's no alternatives. You see that addition to his character or that other aspect, that emphasis on the sanctuary, on the holy things?
Yeah.
Okay. Now, I don't know necessarily what does that mean if you couldn't afford it. Was it specific to, was it a different form of accountability maybe to someone in a higher, like, level of responsibility? Like we've learned, you know, in previous teachings where it was like, well, if you were a priest, then this was, you know, I'm not sure. This is just what it says, and what we can denote is there's a clear emphasis on the manner in which you sin, meaning the faithless and unwitting, and that it's in opposition to or against things that he says are holy, the holy things, and because of that, there's no alternatives. Okay. But he still makes a way. There's still a sacrifice that is acceptable. So I just want to make sure that we're not focusing on there's no alternatives. What about, you know, just because we're working our way through that kind of like, but his grace is supposed to look like this, right? Okay, so remember his character, work that through. Okay. All right, verses 17 through 19. Now, if anyone sins and does one of Adonai's commandments that are not to be done, though he did not know it, still he is guilty and will bear his iniquity. He is to bring to the Kohen a ram without blemish from the flock, according to your value, as a trespass offering. According to your value, who is he talking to? Moses? Right? Okay. Then the Kohen is to make atonement for him over the sin that he committed unknowingly, and he will be forgiven. It is a trespass offering. And then he ends with, he is absolutely guilty before Adonai. I was like, wow, that's an emphasis. Okay, now the emphasis is what I want to speak to. And part of the spirit or the big picture of something that I feel he wants established in us in this season tonight, right? Because knowing that this is our lifestyle, and we're going to be going deeper and deeper and deeper as our lives continue, we have to ask the question, what do you want established in us in this season?
Yeah.
From this portion now, what do you want done or shored up in our character, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
And we know that when something's being shored up in our character, it's because he's revealing his, right? That's the only way that it can be, because I don't know what to shore up in my character if I don't have anything to compare it to.
Yeah.
I'm certainly not going to compare it necessarily to like a human standard.
Right.
Okay. So the emphasis at the end here, he is absolutely guilty, although it's acknowledging that they will be forgiven, that there's still forgiveness available. The emphasis to me seems like he's honing in on the difference between intention and a lack of action. So there's a difference between intention and action. And intention is not only not enough,
right,
but it's sinful. Right? That's part of the emphasis on us becoming a people who are action-based, right? Where we can't just speak things, but we have to put our hands to things. Okay? So whether you are unaware or not, you're still held accountable. Okay? And once you know... This was actually a word that was released over us a couple years ago when we first were confronted with the greatest lie that Yeshua came to get rid of the law. That Yahweh said, okay, I just want you all to remember, I mean, I don't know if this is how he literally said it, but he's like, all right, everybody. But what he said was, when you were unaware, it was one thing.
Yeah. Yes.
Right? But as I make you aware, you will be held accountable to what you know. Okay? So even in unawareness, we're still, as it says, absolutely guilty. Absolutely guilty before Adonai. But once you know, you cannot plead ignorance. Okay? I feel like there is a culture that we've left that still like is sticky, like maybe like has little sticky pieces to, yes, the residue, where it's like living under the excuse of ignorance, even though we are very much alive and aware. So what I want us to take from this heart's intention of Yahweh when it comes to awareness and unawareness, or action versus intention, is the very fact that we have been ignorant is something we should be held accountable for. So what does that look like in your life to ensure that you are walking out his accountability to the things that you've been ignorant to? We could drag our feet in our knowledge, in our understanding, in our empowerment, in our processes, for the sake of pleading ignorance. Subconsciously, even. Right? The less I know, kind of a mindset, right? Mm-hmm. But it is our responsibility as what he's called us, a transitionary people who are taking the bride from the church culture back to his original intent, that means that we cannot use the excuse of ignorance, but we have to take what was our ignorance as our actual motivation to be empowered and knowledgeable. Knowledgeable not for the fact of knowledge and arrogance or in pride, but out of intimate relationship as he calls us back from a place of separation and from a place of slavery. Okay? All right. So, anyways, that's aware versus unaware and action versus intention. That is one of the things that I want us to like pull from this portion and then activate that in your life. What do I have intentions for but never put into action? And it all, I mean, it connects with all of the portion. I mean, it's a false oath. There's so many things. Okay. All right, now I want to end with just being able to release over us more of what we just heard that would express his character. Okay. So we already talked about at the beginning of tonight about how his guidelines and how the means by which he not only brings us into right relationship, but also the means by which he directs us or instructs us so that relationship can be maintained, that distinguishes him from all other gods, right? That he wants to be close. He doesn't want you to live a life that's separate from him. That's not the desire of his heart, and that's not his nature. He provides a way for you to be close every single time. Every single time. In every manner that you position yourself, in every act of sin or transgression against him in your lifestyle, in your choices, every time he provides a way. He wants to be close. He wants to be in right standing with you. Like I said before, he doesn't lord his position over you, but he doesn't lower himself to our condition, which is a good thing.
Yeah.
That isn't a puffed up God who says you are so gross, but it is a holy, holy Father who says, I want you to be in the purified state or condition that I created you to be in. I don't want less than. Would you want a father who settles for less than who he created you to be? Or to have less than the kind of relationship that he created you to have? The fact that he brings structure at all, is an unimaginable, indescribable aspect of his character. I mean, that is his character. The fact that he brings structure, guidelines, so that we can maintain our freedom, our true freedom, right? Being bound to him is freedom. And so that we can maintain connection, that's his character. So when he presses on you through these guidelines and says, I need you to be careful with your words.
Yeah.
Or I'm calling you to this level of integrity, that we wouldn't push back out of frustration or irritation, but acknowledge that the fact that we have a God, a Father, a Creator who brings structure continuously through instructions and then through a Messiah to point us back to those instructions so that we can maintain freedom and connection,
yeah.
That's God.
That's good.
The instructions, the process of atonement and sacrifice is for us to receive forgiveness. That death would have been ours.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Just as Yeshua's death should have been ours. And as a father's sacrifice brings such an understanding of the cost of our actions, meaning his character as a father, not only does sacrifice or receiving sacrifice or giving yourself over in that manner or giving what you have as a sacrifice, not only does that position you to receive forgiveness, but it also is a father who's raising you to have an understanding of the cost of your actions.
Yeah.
That's a good,
yeah. Yeah.
Good
yeah.
God. That's a good father.
Yeah.
To hold you accountable to your actions and to allow you to see, to smell, to sense, to be aware of. I mean, think about the process of sacrificing. Talk about, when I think about it now, I will have to work myself through. Could I handle it? The blood, the sound, an animal, the process. But when I see it also from a perspective of the cost of my actions, it brings an understanding to the way that I position myself. Whether, like we've read, it was intentional or unintentional, which again demands such a standard, but that's because of who he is. which is more of his character. Right? Okay. Come down.
So good.
That's it.
Megan.
Oh, thank you. All right,
thank you, Megan. I appreciate you carrying us this week. Continuing to carry the word as mom and dad are in the rules are sent. I appreciate you releasing that. We know that within your character, you're one that's obviously characterized by someone who is extremely intentional with your words. So we know that even just releasing all of that is a weighty responsibility because of what you've been carrying on. So we appreciate you taking the time and the intentionality to press in for that. So what was highlighted was actually something that Yahweh has presented to our family before, but it was the aspect of how it was a couple months ago, but he was speaking to how it can be easy to claim ignorance with our finances.
Mm-hmm.
And we can say, well, I didn't know that, or I didn't understand this at that point, or I didn't understand how to steward my finances, or I didn't know.
Yeah.
But regardless, you're still susceptible to your actions, right?
Right.
You still have to pay the bills whether you want to now or not. You still have to deal with the bankruptcy if you didn't address it. Like, you still have consequences whether you want to acknowledge them or not.
Yeah.
And so with where he's calling our family, and I think you said it really well, you were saying that your integrity is equal to your intentionality. So the intentionality that you carry really overflows into your character and how you mm-hmm. operate as with integrity as a
yeah.
person. And I think that will very easily translate into finances, that if we do not carry the intentionality of every penny being stewarded, then the intentionality that we carry as a person falls by the wayside as well. And so it felt like tonight he was just giving us a prompting to really look at the promises we've made. I know that it can be easy as for finances specifically to like hold on to a promise that he's made, but to look at a promise
yeah.
that we've made
yeah.
and said like, I'm gonna do this, or I'm gonna walk this out different, or I'm gonna look at this differently. But to really hold ourselves accountable to that. What was the promise that we made? What was the vow that we said? What was the thing that we said we would be intentional in that might fall by the wayside? And what is he calling us to in our level of intentionality to continue to walk that out so our character can continue to reflect his? So just be thinking about that as we're thinking about first fruit, or I'm sorry, about tithes. But we do also have first fruits tonight. If you guys remember, we stepped into Nissan. Did anybody see Mom's little box on King Bears in the middle of their expansion? It's Nissan! it's just exciting to think about. But mm-hmm. Nissan is obviously it's another Hebrew month, but this is the month when he says, oh my gosh, I'm going to say it wrong, but the month will be the beginning of months for you. It will be the first mm-hmm. month of the year. So it's like, in my head, there's kind of like a natural new year, which is like Rosh Hashanah, that like makes sense. It's like, it's the new year and we start.
That makes sense.
In my head, at least, like that's like the natural progression.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's a supernatural one where he says you get to start over.
Mm-hmm.
And so
yeah.
we're at a point where it's like a supernatural walking out of things that he's calling us to. And so to like reflect that, this was the month that he pulled his people out of Egypt. And he said, this will be the month that begins all the year. And this was obviously when Pesach happens and why we're kind of jumping into all that. But it feels like this year and the beginning of a new year brings so much more understanding this go around than
mm-hmm.
even last year.
Yeah.
Because of just the intentionality he's had in our family to walk us through what that means to walk out of Exodus.
And now that we're stepping into Leviticus, it's interesting to now look back at the beginning of Exodus and think, like, that's my story.
Mm-hmm.
That's my heritage. That's my people. That's how he asked us to walk. And that's like a, I feel like I keep saying it, but like, that's real. Like each time it just gets like a little bit more real. But like, we get to truly walk that out. And as a family, we have an opportunity to really engage in that in a whole new realm. And so be intentional again with those first fruits, and thinking through, what did I promise? What did I put my word to that I'm going to walk out in this month of being delivered, redeemed, to walk out onto everything that he showed us? So be thinking about that. And then whenever you guys are ready, we'll do communion tonight.
All right, you guys. Well, I personally feel like after this chapter, after we have gone through more of the detail, we have a deeper understanding of even atonement itself or of a sacrifice, that this is the first time we've taken communion since we've been in Leviticus, right? So there is a pointing back to the sacrifice that was made that is bringing so much more, which sounds, it sounds ignorant to me, myself, that there would be even more to wake up to when it comes to the sacrifice of Yeshua.
Yeah.
That there were things that I didn't fully understand or acknowledge in the sacrifice that was made.
Yeah.
So knowing that he always, meaning Yahweh, always makes a way to ensure that we can be close. That's what this cup and that's what this bread represents. So while you take it tonight, which you can in any order you feel, I want it to be personal and an activation of this word in you. Do it from a place of that deeper understanding that this is a means for you to remain close. Not only for the forgiveness of your sins, but for you to maintain a relationship with him that you could dwell and be pointed back to the guidelines that will ensure that that's sustained from generation to generation.
Yeah.
So when you're ready, go ahead and drink and eat of the bread, and either out loud or in your heart with your families, however you choose to do so, you can also acknowledge that this portion and what that means has been written on your heart, or activated or come to life in your heart, and it's been established. Okay?
All right.
So,
well, Megan, we, of course, just appreciate and are really thankful to, again, just the time you took and the intentionality you had to press into everything that was released tonight, the detail orientation and everything that flowed out of tonight. We just appreciate that. And it's not to be taken lightly. Number one, that we're going through each and every one of these Torah portions with the intentionality that we are week to week, doing it as a community, doing it together, taking step by step forward together. But it's not to be taken lightly that there are ones who will take that time to release and to teach over all of us so that we can continue to move forward together in it. Two points that she began the night with that I want to re-emphasize for us to just hear again as we come to a close. The first one being, don't dismiss or confuse conviction for irritation, because it can be a thing that he really wants us to own. And the second being, remember the character of Yahweh that we are building on as we continue to move forward in this. I am personally just really, I think it's just, like, even if you say the word awesome, that word's like an overused term, right? That was so awesome. But to really think about how awestruck we could be and how awesome of a God, how awesome of a Father that we have, that in His absolute fullness that we're becoming more and more aware of, how awestruck we can be in that, yet also how humbling it is that we have access to that and that He wants us to have access to that and Him to us. Something that I hope that we can walk away with tonight remembering is just that we are responsible for maintaining the integrity of His culture. Mm-hmm. And that is a heavy burden to carry, yet at the same time, what an honor it is to be, number one, first and foremost, reintroduced to His system, to His culture, to His character, and all of this, but that He would entrust us with the responsibility to carry it forward. Mm-hmm. And not even just carry it forward for our own sake so that I can be close, but so that they can be close, so that every one of the next generations can be close, and that can be maintained and multiplied from here on out. Mm-hmm. One thing that has been said before, and I know our family continually is aware of and engages in, but is worth saying again, that a way that we will maintain this process and the way that we will safeguard this being passed down from generation to generation is our reverence, our humility, our gratitude, and our honor for all that He's entrusted us with and all that He's made known to us. Mm-hmm. And so I hope that we can position ourselves to really walk away with all of those activated fully tonight in our reverence, our humility, our gratitude, and our honor for this, as well as positioning ourselves to really own every piece of this. Mm-hmm. And to be careful and to be aware that we're not separating ourselves from the text, if that makes sense. In a way where we can read a Torah portion and it can be so easy to just take a step back, dismiss yourself, and say, this isn't really applicable.
Yeah.
Obviously, because there's different cultural contexts that are not the same today. But even more so than that, something that was hit on tonight was how easy it is to dismiss ourselves from the fullness of what He's trying to relay in His character.
Yeah.
Even in things as simple as, well, I tell the truth, or I keep my word for the most part, or I'm pretty sure I do this, not fully recognizing that there is an open door, an open invitation to fully own it. I'm speaking to myself in this, because I am definitely guilty of being one who will say that, like, well, I'm pretty sure I do that, I'm good at this. But that we could fully see that open invitation and that open door to own every piece of this, as challenging as that can be. So I think tonight is a further, with another step forward that we've taken as a community in these Torah portions, it is another step further into really activating His structure, His system, and being able to own every piece of it. And so I want us to just carry that as we walk away from tonight, knowing that it is building upon everything that's brought us up to this point, everything that He's made clear to us leading up to tonight, and then moving forward, that we would continue to carry that. Thank you all for your time and being here tonight, and your intentionality in preparing and then being able to grab hold of this word tonight. And let's continue in that intentionality and just move from this place with that same weightiness, that same feeling of just gratitude and honor, and just deep thankfulness for all that we're being afforded.
Thank you for listening to this message from Kingdom Heirs International. If you have received insight and revelation with this message, we invite you to claim that revelation by trading on the trading floor with this ministry. You can do that at kingdomheirsflag.org. Thank you.